Nalu FM Finance Podcast. Insight into the financial markets.
They're just things that are too good to be true. But with hindsight, you're always much smarter now to realize at a point in time, it cannot be that you make that amount of money with that type of business. So there needs to be something else. It's very difficult.
This podcast is powered by Vesta, the engine behind active management. Vesta is a Switzerland-based fintech startup that provides software for issuers of actively managed certificates to automate their value chain fully. Visit Vesta, V-E-S-T-R.com, to schedule a meeting with an expert and to learn more about Vesta.
Good morning. I'm here with Andreas Lötscher, Managing Director of ABBL, an advisory boutique that offers services around reputation protection. Good morning, Andy.
Stefan, many thanks for having me and the great pleasure and honor to be part of your podcast. And of course, a very warm welcome to the audience from me as well.
Thank you for your kind words. Let's start with my first question. What is the basis for your assessment of reputation risk? What is it in your mind?
Let me start with a short outline of my CV. I started my career at the Swiss Bank Corporation and then moved to Ernst & Young, where I was 20 years until mid-2018, responsible for banking clients, in particular around audit, but I also did a lot of advisory services. During that time, I came across many instances of crises. For example, in 2004, I took over the leadership role in Lugano for Ernst & Young. As you know, Lugano is the third largest financial market in Switzerland. And reason for me going down there was that one of our clients had lost a lot of money, and I was deemed to help them out from an audit perspective. And throughout my entire career, I was impacted by many of these instances. Let's say I was part of the Siemens audit that had to deal with the reputational crisis after their corruption cases. I was auditor at UBS when the Kweku Adeboli case broke out. And then, unfortunately, I was also part of the Wirecard audit team that is one of the largest frauds in German corporate history. And thereafter, or after EY, I moved to Deutsche Bank. And at Deutsche Bank, I was the chief accounting officer. And one of my activities was that I had to look into each and every crisis to understand if that would have an impact on internal controls and hence the integrity of the finances of the bank.
Sounds quite a few events that we could talk about for quite a long time. When it comes to sort of the assessment of reputation risk, I mean, how do you sort of distinguish between passing noise, you know, there's maybe some noise in the news or and things that could have a lasting impact?
Very difficult and good question. I think there are some factors that need to be looked at. For example, what's the source or who is the author? How frequent is this noise coming about and what are the allegations? When looking at Wirecard, for example, many of the allegations related to activities that were from a couple years out. And for that reason, we deemed at the time that these allegations will probably not have any relevance. Ultimately, what I can say with all of these items is that they all have a negative lasting impact.
True or not true, and short correct. And long.
Okay. Correct.
When something like such an event happens, I mean, I've seen often that sort of companies can dig their heels in and somebody has to come in from the outside and potentially has to take a contrarian view and said no to the business or said you have to do something very different. Is there something you can give as an example, or how did you make the argument? Because
great topic. Look, I think that the most challenging aspect of this is, in my experience, bias and risk. And let me make an example what I mean about that. When you sit in groups or in meetings to express, as you say, a contrarian view can be very difficult because everybody looks at you and tells you, what are you doing here? Why are you slowing down my thoughts? And why are you slowing down the progress? We're all waiting to go for lunch or for dinner or something like that. And then you still have to back it out. I was during a couple of years member of a board, and we had to make a significant investment, but it was very clear at the time that the money wasn't there to make that type of investment. Unfortunately, everybody wanted to go ahead with that investment, and the only way to convince the group that it was not a sound idea to go ahead with that type of investment was to use somewhat irrational arguments. That's the way I went about it.
Okay. Now, you mentioned quite a few companies earlier that were there when certain interesting events happen. And they were all, I presume, publicly listed company, or many of them. And often when, you know, there is allegations being made or the reputation could become, you know, at risk, often these are publicly listed companies and short seller come into the market, or they are the ones who have done the research.
Right.
And, you know, some people have very, I would call it, strong views about short selling. I have one, but I want to ask you, what is your opinion?
Look, I personally think short sellers perform a vital role in the financial markets. Unfortunately, many of them do not like to operate too much under transparency, which complicates things quite a lot. And to outline this, one of the first allegations at Wirecard I had to deal with came out of what they called the Zatara reports. The Zatara reports, as was later found out, were published by a short seller. And we tried to identify the source of these reports. We tried to approach the publishers of these reports, and that was all not feasible, which added to one of the issues, which was later then observed by at Wirecard, that the credibility was significantly negatively impacted, the credibility of these reports, because they didn't want to come out and say, what have they done? Why have they done it? And they significantly benefited, at least from stock market statistics, from the share prices that tanked at that on the day of the publication of these reports. So that makes it, to me, difficult dealing with this type of stakeholder. But at the end of the day, for me, they provide a vital role.
I mean, you just mentioned Wirecard, which is a case where the reputation changed very quickly. For years and years, it was, you know, everybody loved it across the whole board, regulators, politicians, investors, everything. And, you know, and you saw vague how quickly it can then go wrong. But how can actually anybody or an auditor spot fraud? I mean, these companies are so complex. You know, how do you actually go about it?
Mm-hmm. Look, I think you have to really understand from the auditor's role, what is the purpose of an audit? The purpose of an audit is to ascertain that the financial statements are prepared in accordance with a given accounting standard. You have some responsibility with regards to fraud, but that's fairly limited. So first and foremost, the role of an audit is not to identify fraud. If you come across fraud, you have to perform steps that are deemed to be in accordance with auditing standards. But ultimately, identifying fraud, as you said, is very difficult, and I don't really think that I by no means have a greater level of intelligence about identifying fraud.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in this case, there was, you know, the cash was somewhere apparently in the trustee and escrow account, but it was clearly, you know, not the case or disappeared. I think the Spiegel article that came out last week has some interesting points on that one. But what I struggled, and, you know, feel free to comment on it, was a little bit, there's an auditor, there's the regulator, there's all these people who are supposed to do a certain job, but nobody was really responsible for finding the fraud. Or is there somebody?
Look, I think overall, if you have a perpetrator which has a certain level of criminal mindedness and energy, it is really difficult. If you look at, just as a small example, in this Wirecard case, you had over 100 police men, members of secret services, etc., for over 2 years investigating the case. At the end of the day, the only thing they know, that the cash is no longer there, but they haven't found really any evidence. And to crack these guys by, let's say, forensic interviews or something like that, none of them so far has by no means answered, yes, it was me, and that's the way I have done it. And their main witness they are having, no one is really certain if that's not just one more game that is being played in this whole story.
I mean, with the benefit of hindsight, is there something that should have been done differently, or that the whole, as a society and regulators, can learn from it, that could be changed? Or are you saying it's just so complex?
No, let me answer the question from a couple of different angles. So what we have done as auditors was the following. Every time there was an allegation of something going wrong, we laid it out, tried to understand what the allegation was all about, and did procedures around it. Unfortunately, at the time, even with the help of forensics teams, we weren't able to find any evidence. But what would have happened? That's the second angle I would like to look at. What would have happened if we had delayed or qualified our audit report? Given the hype that was around this company at the time, it is highly unlikely that besides another tank of the stock price for a certain period of time would have happened, and then it would have recovered. So just delaying the audit opinion or qualifying the audit opinion will not uncover a fraud, only if the whole system crumbles.
Yep.
Which means, again, what I have just tried to say, that you have someone standing up and saying, yes, I confess it was me. But in these extreme schemes, how likely is that? I don't have an answer. And then it's really about the environment. The environment at the end of the day is such that, as you said, there was a big hype about this company. It was the darling of politicians, of regulators, of everybody. not just in Germany, but all,
no.
all across Europe. And everybody wanted to believe in that unicorn status of that company. And they're just things that are too good to be true. But with hindsight, you're always much smarter, no? to realize at a point in time, it cannot be that you make that amount of money with that type of business. So there needs to be something else. It's very difficult.
I mean, that's when I spoke to some of my friends who are, you know, do a lot of sort of, you know, financial analysis of companies, and they always raise to me sort of a little, you know, Wirecard never created any free cash flows, you know, how was this not seen as a red flag, or, is it, but I don't know, is that part of the auditor responsibility?
No, red flag is a great topic. Now that was one thing that challenged us greatly when we looked at all these allegations, because our forensics colleagues came up with several red flags. But when you have a red flag, you have to do something with it. You have to continue investigating or performing procedures.
No, I think that's a very good point. You as an auditor don't really have the power to enforce certain things. You can only observe, in a sense, and ask for the information. I think one thing sort of for maybe interesting to hear, what sort of were your personal learnings from, I mean, that still is probably and was very intense for you.
It was brutal. I mean, we worked night and day at the time, and then ultimately it impacted my career severely, as you know. And luckily I have now this new opportunity to work as the chairman of this company, or the managing director of this company. In my view, there are three things. Collaboration needs to be facilitated, allowed, and enabled. There were so many parties at the end of the day looking into that case, but no one spoke to the other. I had information that was protected by
client
confidentiality. Thank you. And I wasn't able to talk to anyone outside the firm. And even inside the firm, all the consultations I did make at the time, you had to be careful what you could actually say. The same thing, the regulator, let's call it BaFin or the DPR or, they never approached us and asked questions. Whenever we approached them asking questions, they were saying, that's your job. Then the public prosecutor that was approached a couple of times by Wirecard, they never spoke to us either. And we were definitely not allowed to talk to the public prosecutor. So I think one thing that really needs to change is its collaboration. The second thing that needs to change and has already changed is that the client has to prove its innocence. It cannot be that a third party needs to jump up and down to ultimately prove the innocence of another party. So as soon as you have some severe allegations, the client needs to stand up, needs to do all his work and come up.
And you say that has changed?
I think that has changed, yes. And the last thing is the audit requirements. For example, audit requirements in Germany are such that you cannot exit a client during an engagement, except if you have evidence that there was a fraud. And the same is with the qualification of an audit opinion or withholding an audit opinion. Still to this day, the standards ask for a lot of evidence to do so. Otherwise, you open up yourself as a firm to liability. Yeah. Claims.
Significant, yeah.
And that has also significantly changed because if you look at a couple of instances, Aurubis in Germany, there was the Adler Group, I think, in Germany, where no no audit opinion was given because the auditor just said, I don't have enough evidence. And the public gave them the green light to do so, i.e. there was no ramification post the fact in terms of liability claims.
I mean, you clearly have fully experienced this one. So you are, I think, you know, with all that experience, you know, you can truly, you know, help people in protecting their reputation. But I think what if I would be in your shoes, my worry would be a little bit, you know, there's a reputation risk for a company. There's allegations being made and the company wants to hire you and you might get on the wrong side of it because you're actually trying to help a company that deserves a bad reputation. How do you go about making sure you don't get caught on the wrong side?
Look, at the end of the day, I have not identified or presumed the matter and I, at Wirecard and in any other instances I was involved in, and I would never argue that I'm able to do going forward. What I'm offering as a service is that I'm helping clients to prevent such issues from happening. Although there is no guarantee that you can completely prevent if someone has malicious intentions. There is this famous example of the fence. You can build a fence as high as you want, but you will always find someone that climbs over or under it.
Yep.
if he or she wants to do so. And the other thing is during investigations, there are also many options that can be taken during such an investigation. And in particular, you can spend a whole lot of money during such investigations, and I can help firms or individuals or lawyers or any other external party during those investigations. And then last but not least, the remediation phase is also very crucial, which means making sure that the right lessons learned, whatever type of crisis you are in, are taken at the end of the day.
And changes will happen inside the organization to reflect that. Yeah, exactly. There's a huge amount of energy often when that happens inside an organization, sidelined from the main business, basically. Are there technologies that could help? You see something in there? I've seen very simple things, let's say on the fraud side, HR departments using software to analyze CVs to spot people making misstatements, but you know, it's not guaranteed, it's just highlight.
Yeah. No, look, there are great tools out there. I just read an article lately about a anti-money laundering tool that is equipped with artificial intelligence. The challenge is always to deal with all the false positives. And even the best software cannot address false positives. You always need some kind of human intervention to look into this. The downside with technology, as we all know, is as soon as people know how it works, they will find a way to circumvent, and if they want.
Yeah.
That's always the prerequisite. And let me make a short example from Australia. When I was working for Ernst & Young in Australia, they introduced the anti-money laundering laws. And because I came from Switzerland, and Switzerland had a long established history to deal with anti-money laundering allegations, and it was one of the first countries to actually introduce laws against to prevent anti-money laundering. Everybody deemed I would be perfectly suited to sell the EY services to financial services clients in Australia. And whenever I met a client, they all told me, we don't have any money laundering issues at our place. But when you looked at the statistics, crime generated $7 billion Australian dollars on an annual basis. That cash
had to go somewhere.
But everybody we talked to said
not to them,
not to us, exactly.
Yeah. So yeah, I can see this. No, I mean, thank you very much. It's been great. Something I always like to ask somebody at the end is sort of, what's your favorite song, piece of music? You know,
I like rock music quite a lot. My latest one song I heard almost an entire summer long was Renegades from Ex-Ambassadors, but that's kind of the style that attracts me.
Excellent. And now for everybody who listened to this, I mean, how can they best reach you?
Either by phone or by mail. And I know you're publishing that type of information.
Yeah, easily. I will do that.
Thank you very much, Stefan. It's been a great pleasure.
Great. Fantastic. Thank you, Andy.
Nalu FM Finance Podcast. Insight into the financial markets.
This podcast is powered by Vesta, the engine behind active management. Vesta is a Switzerland-based fintech startup that provides software for issuers of actively managed certificates to automate their value chain fully. Visit Vesta, VESTR.com, to schedule a meeting with an expert and to learn more about Vesta.